Hello, welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show podcast. If you are like most, you are here because you want to gain insights on how to best scale a business. To achieve optimum scaling, many metrics are important. Sales, leads, cost of customer acquisition, gross revenues. However, as you know, no statistic is as important as profits, both net and gross. For over a decade, your host, Richard Doherty, has helped his clients increase their profits, often turning them into profit-rich winners. To help listeners like you achieve stellar profits in business, Richard has written an ebook entitled Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. It includes profit-making advice from Richard, as well as some of the top guests he's had on the podcast. Just for listening, it is yours free. Simply go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. Now, over to the show with Richard Doherty, founder and host.
Hello, I'm Richard, a change and transformation consultant and self-confessed fintech enthusiast. And today, we continue our series looking at the evolution of fintech in 2023.
And super excited to welcome on the show today both Eric and Hugo. They both work at Fidelity in different roles. Hugo heads up the Enterprise Architecture Group, and Eric is over on the Ventures side. So guys, thanks for joining us today. Super excited to have you on the show.
Thanks for having us. We're both excited as well.
Awesome. We like that. So listen, to kick it off, I thought it would be great to get both of your insights as to what excites you about 2023 in the fintech ecosystem, and also just generally in the banking tech ecosystem. Maybe Hugo, you can sort of take the lead in that, and then Eric, it would be great to hear from you.
Sure, great. Thanks, Richard. So I guess from my perspective, which is probably more of the procurement end of fintechs, is I guess it's just going to be a continuation of where we are now, but hopefully a bit more of an acceleration of the innovation that's going on within that space. I think we've seen over the last few years sort of the reality around data and the importance of that. I think from there, people are realizing that with good data, you can do quite a lot more things. So sort of evolution of the AI space, ML, all of the good things there. But also on the application side of things, with a consistency in data, you start seeing innovation in the sense of breaking up of monolithic architecture. So people starting to componentize their world and also sort of move away from their traditional architecture. So even big vendors are looking at replatforming their system. So I guess the continuation of that is nothing, I guess, really new from my perspective, but hopefully more of an evolution in that space.
And Eric, what do you see from the venture space?
A lot of things. So,
What excites you?
If we take the last few years, we've seen an eruption of interest among both new founders as well as industry participants towards fintech. I think we're definitely not slowing down in that respect towards fintech in 2023. What I would say is that the prior environment was probably unsustainable, that perhaps a lot of business models got funded, and perhaps in the current new realms of flight to quality, the best will persist. I think it's a positive for the overall industry that we've gone through this shakeup, despite the fact it might be quite tough, even if you're looking at the macroeconomic environment, especially in Europe and what's facing us. But we're quite excited about a range of different business models that obviously touch the universe of asset management and wealth management. There's a lot of themes that started developing in the US that haven't really been cracked that efficiently in Europe yet. You know, the disparity of US versus Europe is quite real. You don't have just one, I would say, federal structure that you can tap into, and the variance of languages makes it a little bit more difficult, as well as the regulatory environments. But we're quite excited about backing founders who are trying to tackle the aging population and the changing needs of financial services that the retired population has. We're also quite excited about the opportunity to disrupt the private banking and financial services market tailored towards the more affluent customers, but delivered digitally towards the more mass of the end of the curve. The evolution around climate risk and ESG, there's a lot of opportunity that people aren't thinking yet because they don't have the access to data to follow up Hugo's point around enabling data. The climate risk models, in particular transition risk models, could really enable us to have a really new lens of applying capital in a different new way. So quite excited about the opportunities. There's plenty of new companies with some very strong PhDs tackling this space. Despite that, a really important topic for us is democratization of stewardship across public markets. A handful of companies trying to tackle it from different angles. And then another point, which is perhaps very segmented, is niche community enablement of financial services. So think of it as Islamic finance, specific LGBTQ focused areas. We've seen a plethora of women-led finance platforms focused on education and then really have to like mature into new space. So a lot of new themes that I think will develop further in 2023. I don't think people are stopping and there's plenty of dry powder in the market to fuel that. But I'm quite excited towards kind of people being more prudent around quality when they're looking at business models.
Yeah, some great insights there. And so I like your enthusiasm, which is rubbing off of me. It's really infectious. I can hear it. So 2023 is shaping up to be an interesting year. But just to pedal back into what you're saying, Hugo, about the continuation, the evolution of taking in some of the great work that is done by some of the fintechs out there and incorporating that tech into the modern day stack inside corporates. I mean, what do you see as that evolution, as a pathway going into 2023 and maybe the fledglings into 2024? What are the steps that are being taken right now, and what is the continuation of that look like for you guys?
I think for us, and I'm sure a lot of other sort of peers, it's really about sorting out their data architecture, their foundational architecture, to make best use of all of the new technologies and the fintechs coming around. I think some of the things that are going on that enable us to do that is really shift to cloud. That means that people are having to re-examine how they do things and what architecture they want to take, whether that is utilizing SaaS, SaaS services from vendors, or even building their own homegrown things in the cloud. It means we have to do things in a different way. And that means that we've got the opportunity to look outside of our sort of historic legacy sort of architecture and look at new ways of doing things. So that's kind of giving us certainly a little more momentum as we go into 2023. So again, laying the foundations, looking out in the market for new and innovative and interesting vendors to work with across all of the spectrum of our world, as it were, and then trying to work out where we can take opportunities, I guess.
Yeah, I hear that. I think you touched on a number of great points there. But as you move forward into this new sort of layer, this new evolution, taking in maybe different types of technologies, different types of vendors, does your lens on return on investment change, or does that sort of remain the same, but you have to drill down a bit more to exactly get the value from different types of engagements, because some of those engagements might be sort of sandboxes, right?
I think you're always going to have the traditional sort of ROI questions, so you know, tangible costs and benefits of doing a change. But I think there are going to be more, newer intangibles that we have to consider. So things around agility, scale, speed to market, all of those are much more enabled now than they used to be, I think, and much more prominent. I think also, as we sort of evolve our architecture, as we sort of this shift to cloud allows us to be a little bit thinking in a much shorter time scale than we used to. So I think before, when we went out choosing vendors, we're looking at a 5, 6, 7, even 10 year sort of time horizon in terms of keeping that vendor inside. But now, because the technology enables us, we can actually look at it from a much shorter sort of period of time, looking at things more as stepping stones rather than necessarily a longer timeline. Alongside that, I think for Fidelity, we've got the benefit of the Strategic Ventures Group, and that means that we can also align our investment from a company perspective alongside the investment in our infrastructure. And so with the example of Finborn, that's where we've taken an investment there, because they are strategically aligned to what we're trying to do as a business, and that sort of technology allows us to grow there. So I think that return of investment sort of question, it's much broader now. I think we've got much more more ability to bring in other angles to make a better business case for looking at new vendors.
Nice. And just to bring Eric into discussion, because you mentioned sort of the ventures arm and the collaboration between you guys and them. And, you know, although we are optimistic, and you did sound very optimistic at the front, looking at different themes and different potentials into 2023, there is the big R word that's on the horizon and that everyone's talking about. So I'd like to know from you, Eric, I mean, will the potential of a recession dampen fintech investment in 2023? What is your view on that?
Yes, but I think, in short, yes, but I think the answer is a little bit more complex than that, because it's already happening, right? So if you think about, let's call it the tech sector overall, we started seeing a compression of multiples and, you know, huge values in the public market side dropping from November until this time, and we're still in a decline, despite the fact that I'm not a public market specialist, so I shouldn't really forecast where we're going to end up at the bottom. But that said, that is a very important point, because a lot of the growth investors who are investing at the pre-IPO stage are suddenly left with positions on their books where they have probably overpaid. Well, no, not on all instances, but if you look at some publicly listed venture capital funds, they had to do quite a lot of communication towards down rounds and NAV down rides in regards to their positions. And that is creating already a crunch at the growth stage. So companies that are, let's say, Series C to Series E, in particular, not only just in Europe, but also in the US, will have a harder time to get capital. We've already seen this in the processes that have been raising in the last 6 months, where people are looking at the more granular level, at the returns of business models, at the efficiency of use of capital, and hence that is creating a bit of a different dynamic. So I expect that will continue, and people will be more prudent, especially at the growthier end of the curve. But then what's also quite interesting is that a lot of the investors who was focused on Series B onwards are now trying to go a little bit earlier now as well. So the earlier stage rounds have become more competitive. So you've got a bit of a mix and match of a situation in the market where there's still a lot of dry powder among a lot of funds, and they have to deploy it. So there's a bit of a conflict of interest there, where, you know, the LPs want to preserve returns and get something delivered. And some of the earlier stage GPs in the market, they have to deploy. So it will be an interesting dynamic to observe. But yeah, we as investors are also cautious. So despite the fact that we're really actively hunting for the right opportunities, I wouldn't say we have changed our requirements, but we're putting more of an effort, as well as others, on ensuring that the capital efficiency is in the DNA of the companies that we back. And that is also the messaging that we're getting to our portfolio companies, so that they can prepare really for the shift in the market. Because I think some of the companies in 2021 that have raised phenomenal rounds really have to do a bit of a step change in regards to how efficiently they're deploying their capital, which is also seeing the public markets with all the restructuring plans undergone across the tech sector.
And just to stay on that for a second, We've also seen over the past, most probably a year, maybe a bit longer, the rise of acquisitions. You got ICE, UBS, yeah. Alt, Apollo, all going out and really making a stamp in the market and acquiring some nice businesses. I mean, do you see that trend continuing into 2023?
Yes, definitely. As you rightly pointed out, some of the larger private equity shops focusing on the tech sector have been very, very active. Thoma Bravo, Vista, and others, they have taken three companies, public companies, private. We see a lot of actions across the private landscape as well, although the urgency isn't there yet as much. You know, like if you're a public listed company and suddenly someone comes in and gives you a 20, 30% premium on the public valuation, suddenly that's a very hard know that the board will have to communicate towards its shareholders. So there's a lot more opportunities there and people are being very diligent. I loved one of the podcasts that was presenting kind of the DNA of the acquirers, and they're always looking for the right opportunity without too much technology debt. And you know, this was something that we are quite aware of with conversations with Hugo as well. Like you, when we're thinking about the best of breed technology out there, that is still in the hype. And I think there's a lot more activity across the M&A landscape for incumbents, where they're going to be picking up some of these growth stage assets at the peanuts of what they would have paid a year ago. And we've also seen a lot of share-based acquisitions. So, large companies trying to bring in younger companies, not just through acquihire, but also by bolting on additional capabilities from a product standpoint into their machinery. So it's definitely an exciting time to go through this, but it's got to be choppy waters for sure.
Want to increase the profits in your business? Download Richard's ebook right now, Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. It will help you find new ways to increase your profits. Best of all, it's free. Go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up.
And as we, you know, look into some of the deeper trends and some of the build outs off the back of what we've been building in the fintech ecosystem for the past, I don't know, 10 or 15 years or so, what are some of the trends that both of you see continuing into 2023? Will there be open banking, API, a service surge? Will crypto become, you know, in inverted commas, mainstream? Is contactless technology, platform payments here to stay, artificial intelligence, is that further going to be boosted in 2023? Keen to see what you guys think are some of the key trends moving into the next year. Maybe Hugo, from your perspective, from an enterprise architecture tech perspective, what is some of the key things you're looking out for?
So I guess much more on the asset management side of things. I think, you know, data is always going to be a big theme, I think, for probably forever. But as we, you know, try and look at alternative data and the accumulation of data, both internal and external, then we're going to have want to be able to process those much more efficiently. That brings in AI. We're trying, you know, we're certainly experimenting and looking at opportunities internally, and I'm sure a lot of our peers are. But it's really trying to work out how we can make it work for us, given all of the tools that are becoming made available. And it'll be interesting to see how commoditized some of the vendors can get the technology to be. So not just vanilla sort of AI software, but really bespoke to the things that we're trying to do. So things like that will continue. I think the other trend, again, from a business perspective, is how much data we can then expose certainly to our clients, both from an institutional and a wholesale perspective, but I would imagine more so into the retail space as well. How do we do that safely? How do we make sure that, you know, everything that we produce and make available is relevant and and correct. So, you know, that safe, and on top of that, obviously security and comes into it. So all of that kind of topic from a data perspective is there. But then, you know, much more on the investment side of things, we're looking at, obviously, alternative assets are a big theme in the market. How do we enable that more? How do we make that easier from an investment perspective? Again, sort of what data is available? How do we cross that with public markets and give a much richer kind of experience both to our internal sort of investment teams, but also to end clients? How do we make it easier for people to invest in those? Then, you know, sustainability will continue to be a big theme. And again, data is a core part of that. And then final trend, I guess, is you know, continuation of the look into blockchain and how that technology can really help us sort of streamline, make things more efficient. We've been talking about blockchain for years, and I know there are many skeptics out there about it, but I know we have to sort of keep an eye on it and see where things go, because I think if a network starts springing up around these things, it can really change the way that we do business. And so, yeah, it's just topics that we have to keep an eye on, either sort of really deep in it or just on the sidelines, watching on and watching for movement.
And what about yourself, Eric? What are some of the key trends? I know you mentioned some at the top of the show. What else would you like to mention now off the back
Definitely.
Of what you were saying?
Obviously, you touched upon quite a few, and they're always interlinked between kind of the business and technology, because that's where a lot of the opportunity arises, between data silos and not having access to some certain asset classes, for example. So let's start there. So we did our investment into Moonfair, which is a democratization platform to private equity and venture capital. And the whole purpose was, asset managers traditionally didn't have access to this because they were focusing either on the equity side or the fixed income side. And then if you're thinking about the monolithic incumbent providers in this space, that you just can't add the additional pillar of the asset class into that tech backbone. So that actually feeds into also our thesis around Finborn, which is quite an efficient backbone that can enable both asset managers and other participants to enable other new asset classes into the mix. The other part, you alluded to, sustainability, huge topic for Fidelity. We really want to build out a view on sustainability going forward, but there's a lot of there. There's, you know, ESG reporting, ESG analytics, there's portfolio construction, there's the element of climate risk. And the biggest challenge here is standardization, because if you look at, for example, the MIT study that was comparing a lot of the ESG frameworks and ratings of publicly listed companies, they had such a variance. So we're going to go through a bit of a transformation in the industry. I think the one trend there that I like is enabling enterprises to have a flexible platform. So really building out the rails, and so they can choose the right data point, the right process in place to facilitate their activities, which is probably going to be more for the more sophisticated end of the curve. And then toward the rest of the market, there's plenty of other players that are already taking care of that. Beyond that, on the personal investing side, there's that community-led approach that I really like. The reason why I like it is, you know, if you understand the community, your customers, the end customers, you can really build out a lot of capabilities on the back of it. And don't think that there were so many successful ones in Europe yet. And I'm hoping there's going to be more of an eruption of it. And there, you can start off with a financial service product or an investment product, and you can diversify in so many other things. We've seen a great example of that with Shopify, for example. You know, they started off with catering towards commerce companies, but enabling to have an online presence. And then they realized over time, there's a lot more money by facilitating payments. Now they're also adding in additional capabilities beyond that. So they're adding additional profitable capabilities on the back of it, which kind of works in favor of the embedded finance trend. Again, there, we also have an investment in Driveblow. So, you know, I'm probably not sharing that many sacred things by following our portfolio. I think we're quite aligned to a lot of the publicly available trends in the industry. But it kind of all makes sense focusing on the macro trends around consumer behaviors, enabling the trends of businesses as well, and the challenges they have around cloud transformation, budgets, and frankly, the suppression of margins. especially when it comes to asset managers, you really have to find the right opportunities to kick in the ROI with transformations and realizing how can you be differentiated. You know, by bringing the right tech, you have to also have the internal structures within the companies to build out the competitive capabilities on top of it. And I think there's still a lot more to be done there.
Yeah. Some great bits of wisdom there. I love what you're saying about community and a community-led approach. There's some really interesting stuff going on in that world. The likes of Finimize, as an example, are doing some really interesting stuff, and others in the space. So, as we look to wrap up the show, maybe it would be great to get a bit of advice from both of you. What's the one thing or the one bit of advice that you'd like to give to leaders out there in the financial services space as we head into, must probably be a year that's going to test our mettle in some way or other. What's the advice that you guys would like to give them? Eric, why don't you go first, and then Hugo, you can follow.
I will give, well, I'm not sure if it's advice, but I will give a perspective. And that's primarily driven by the fact that I think there's still a lot of opportunities in the fintech space and people shouldn't shy away from it. That it's, of course, very hard sometimes to leave a job and do the risky part of launching a startup and tackling some of the challenges. It doesn't matter whether you think of the B2C or B2B landscape, but really going out there and tapping into the funds that are available right now is probably a great opportunity because so much capital and so many people are really trying to help the founders as well as other leaders willing to take the jump. So I would definitely encourage people to look into it. And we as a firm, despite the fact that we always focus primarily more on the growth end of the curve, we started doing a lot more early stuff as well because we appreciate that really tapping into the talent early on with people who are able to solve a problem because of their previous experience or capabilities is a great recipe. And there's been a lot more smarter people who have been doing this for a lot longer who has actually replicated the same model. So we definitely encourage people to not shy away from it despite the fact that it might be a challenging macro environment.
Yeah, and Hugo, anything to add to that?
I guess from my perspective is I guess, you know, there will be people slowing down their transformation programs and changes. And I think that's going to be, you know, somewhere where I would suggest we need to sort of carry on investing in transformation where we can. It's for these, you know, sort of situations where you want an architecture that is flexible enough to be able to take the opportunities as they happen. You know, I've talked about data. Data is really key in getting that sort of foundational layer done, sort of available so that you can build on top of it. And if that is there, if that is in the cloud, then people are able to start building on top of it, change things much quicker, much cheaper in the future. If that base layer, that kind of foundational backbone continues to be there. So I think, you know, where we can, we want to carry on investing. I think that's one for the market, and really invest wisely in the technology. Don't, you know, you can have much shorter sort of timelines, I think, for this than traditional. So I think those are the things to keep in mind.
Awesome, guys. Thanks for coming on the show today. Some really good points of view and perspectives there. Folks out there, if you want to get in touch with these guys, the guys at Fidelity, what is the best way, Hugo and Eric, to get in touch with you?
Hugo?
Well, I guess I am on LinkedIn. I'm sure others will be able to find the contact details, but yeah, LinkedIn's
probably this way. For me, LinkedIn works as well, especially if people write actually a message while they're connecting. That always helps a bit of a, you know, customization. And then also on fisv.com. So we've got a bit of a outreach via that as well, which is possible.
Okay, I've got to make a confession quickly. I connected with you today on LinkedIn, but I didn't put a message. So sorry about that, but it's in your inbox. Please accept it. You know how things go sometimes. But guys, reach out to the guys if you want to chat more about anything that they're up to. I'm sure they'll be keen to have a chat with you. And looking forward to touching base with everyone next week as we continue to look into what's shaping up like a really interesting year in 2023 in fintech and across the banking industry. Stay tuned to the Fintech Scaling Show and speak to you all soon.
Thank you for listening to the Fintech Scaling Show podcast. Please take advantage of the free gift Richard has waiting for you. It's his new ebook, Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. Simply go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up.